There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, Tim Dennis. This is Supernatural News Parashare. My voice is a little extra gravelly today, Tim. We just got back from the Michigan Paracon, where we had an amazing time. I think it was our 11th. Nobody got to go last year, so this it was 1 year lag in there, but the 11th one, my 10th year in a row. What a fantastic event. A lot of fun people, a lot of cool stuff going on. And it was great to see so many of the listeners out there having fun with us as well.
Yeah. You know, I got to give a shout out to Pete and his friend. I don't remember what his friend's name is. They were listeners from all the way back in the K-Talk days. And I, believe it or not, I ran into a few listeners who we were kind of lost in the ether, I guess you could say, who I reconnected with while I was sitting there at the table. And hopefully they're picking up with this episode now and joining us here at Stitcher. So I want to say hey to
Excellent. Them. Yeah. Very cool. Well, It's good to have some of you back that we'd lost before. Yeah, I still get a kick out of going online and people are like, man, I really miss Darkness Radio. I'm like, miss us how? Well, you guys have been off the air since you left K-Talk. I'm like, no, we haven't. We've been here all along. So we constantly are picking up old listeners following and finding us again. So it's strange that people that listen to the show didn't follow that when we left the show, we told them where we were going. But what are you going to do? We're glad to recapture those people. So I've got to tell you, Tim, I'm at an undisclosed location for the next 75 days.
Oh, wow.
I'll be filming for a new series, Cindy Keza and myself. Shane Pittman is off filming a different series. And very exciting. I get into my room. I black it. You know, I like sleeping in a pitch black room, ice cold and pitch black. So I get the air conditioning set right. I get the blinds all shut and cinched tight. So I'm like, finally, I'm going to get some good sleep. Apparently, my room is directly above the kitchen.
Oh.
Which begins serving breakfast at 6 a.m.
Ooh.
I cannot hear a thing. It is beautiful. It is quiet. This is a great, I can say this, it's a Holiday Inn. It's dead silent. I like that. However, at 6 a.m., with no lights in my room, my sound machine going to distract me from hallway noises, my room suddenly is assaulted by the scent of bacon.
Oh.
Bacon, bacon, bacon. And I woke up gnawing on a pillowcase. Is that a problem?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So that's going to be tough if I have to live in this hotel for the next 75 days with nothing but the scent of bacon surrounding me every morning starting at 6 a.m.
It's not a problem for the first 10 days. But after that, yeah, I could see where that might be a problem. Yeah.
Now, I'm pretty sure I put on 4 pounds just smelling the massive amounts of bacon that they made this morning. So it's this is not going to be good for me. I'm not going to get any sleep. By the time this thing's done, I'm going to need like a sensory deprivation tank. No sound, no smells, no light. That's how I have to live now.
So did you go down for bacon this morning?
I might have gone down for a little bacon.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't sate my sensual appetite. My sense being my nose. It's still permeates the entire building, which is good. I mean, that's a better smell than I've smelled in some hotels, which sometimes I've got that moldy pool smell. Or ancient cigarette smell.
Oh,
this hotel's scrubbed clean. It's beautiful. It's a great hotel. It just is filled with the tantalizing scent of bacon.
Nothing wrong with that.
So apparently we set off a landmine last week.
With what?
By playing the segment from Tucker Carlson.
Okay.
Because again, I said I don't know enough about him to know, is he going to piss people off? And well, he did.
I know enough about him to know that, yeah, he does. But in all fairness, and I thought I prefaced it enough by saying, putting all political leanings aside, it's nice to see that he's tackling the issue.
Right. And that was right. My point is, you know, yeah. We're not going to avoid reporting a news story because it might have a name you don't like associated with it. The story is still the story. And I will not read any of the hate mail we got for even mentioning Tucker Carlson. And don't send me more hate mail because I mentioned him again this episode. Again, look at the context to which we're speaking about him. And I understand, well, he's a joke. He's a horrible. Oh, he's the best. You guys should be talking to him all the time. I understand you have your opinions, but we're just going to read the news story as it presents itself. And again, I was one of those. I'm not sure how this is received, how people like him, but this is the story. Here's one email. Dear Dave and Tim, I've been a listener since the very beginning of Darkness Radio, and I've never missed an episode. I own and operate a small business, and I love to listen while driving on the job site. I can't recall how I found your show, but I believe you started right around the time I got my first MP3 player, which seems like a million years ago. Anyway, on the current episode, you broached the subject of UFOs, and specifically Tucker Carlson's coverage of them. As you may or may not know, Tucker has been doing segments on UFOs for years on his nightly show. He's had on a lot of regulars like Nick Pope and Luis Elizondo, among others, that have been providing a valuable service considering he has the number one show ratings-wise in cable history. Mm. By covering this topic on the show, he is getting information out to people who generally wouldn't give the topic a moment's notice. You admitted that you don't know anything about Mr. Carlson, only that what you've read, that didn't stop you from taking a mild shot or two at him, which you also did in a show a couple of weeks back for some reason I can't recall, because we joke around. It's a bit. We've taken shots at everybody on all sides of the political spectrum, all aspects of the paranormal. We just joke around. Carlson is reviled by many in the media, the email continues saying, and most likely by the authors of whatever piece you read on him. There's a reason why his show is so popular. He doesn't suffer fools in our government and media who lie to us repeatedly, and his UFO coverage is another example of that. Everyone knows that the government, deep state, has lied about what they know regarding the subject, and he is attempting to bring that further into the light to an audience who may or may not know about the topic. I would encourage you to be a touch more open-minded. First of all, screw you. I don't think you're going to meet two more open-minded humans on the planet Earth. And if you've been listening to our show since day one, you should know that about us. That we joke around about everybody and everything. And I told you up front, I don't know about the guy. I joked around because I think he wore a bow tie, but then I tied it into Doctor who wears a bow tie and says bow ties are cool. And I happen to be a fan of Doctor Who and of that iteration who wore the bow tie. So simmer, cool your jets, son. That's all I got to say.
Well, if I can throw something in just real quick and I'll let you continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can tell you're a huge fan of Tucker Carlson, and I get it. But you also threw in some hyperbole and some Tucker Carlson-isms by saying he's, unless you preface it with maybe news ratings and highest rated, okay, maybe you might be able to throw in a nice argument there. He's not the number one rated in all-time cable history. There are other shows that can claim that, but not Tucker. I'm sorry. You know, I get where you're going or where you want to go with the slant, but you're throwing out slanted facts. And that's where you kind of lose me in your argument. If you want to throw facts at us, that's fine. But you're throwing slanted facts immediately in this part of the email. And it's okay to cheerlead for a guy that you like, and that, I respect that. You want to, hey, I'll cheerlead all day long for my interest, which is wrestling, but I'll only throw facts at you as to where they're at in the state of their business. And right now, the state of their business is down. They're not doing great ratings. So you know, first of all, come at us with facts about the guy and where he sits.
And he's coming at him with the facts that he knows or has read and has been privy to. So unfortunately, that's kind of the angle we all take, is what we know or think we know. So I'm not picking on Jeff, the author of this email, either. But I do And Jeff, I just selected your email because it was showing that you had passion for Tucker and what he's been doing, which we respect. And that's why I said, we'll report both sides. When I get an article that is sent my way that mentions Tucker Carlson and UFOs, we'll talk about it. I only asked, I think last week, and I can't remember the exact way it was worded since we recorded a week ago, and we've had 2 billion conversations since then with people. But all I was saying was, I don't know if he's one of those guys that people respect or do not respect, but it seems like he's one of those kind of guys that is right in the middle. People either love him or hate him, according to the emails that I got this week. And I got vitriol from both sides, as though we didn't give him enough props or we gave him way too many props. So it's funny. Again, we're just going to read it. You know how many emails we've got when we might mention Trump's name in an article? It has nothing to do with politics, but it might just be that. And President Trump, you know, saw a UFO in 1982. Oh, why are you bringing him up? It had nothing to do with his politics. It had nothing to do with the hatred or this or that. And I'm not saying he did see one in 82. As a matter of fact, I think he doesn't believe in UFOs, if I remember correctly. But, you know, even just bringing the names up brings out some kind of vitriol. It's very strange.
Well, I can tell you this much, and this is an accurate statement. From either side of the aisle, you bring up Tucker's name, it's divisive. You either like the guy or you don't. That's all there is to it. And it's based on his show. His show is an opinion piece. There, and that's going to piss off the people who love him because they think he reports only from the side of truth. And the people who don't like him think his show is an opinion piece. And that's where it falls. That's right down the middle of the line.
So, and Jeff tells me, oh, by the way, he hasn't worn a bow tie in years. Well, that's a shame. Bring back the bow tie. I'm starting to rock the bolo again, Tim.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Yeah. I brought the bolo back. You'll be seeing me wearing a bolo in the new series. Why? Because I like bolos. And I figure, why should the 90s be the last time people wore bolos and made them look good? So I, Dave Schrader, am going to single-handedly try to bring back the Bruce Springsteen Tunnel of Love Tour look to the new series I'm a part of. That's all I'm going to say.
And can I throw this out to Jeff real quick?
Sure.
Jeff, buddy, I've worked both sides of the aisle in media, both sides, left and right. You can't pull one over on me, pal. You can't. I've worked for conservative talk stations. I've worked for liberal talk stations. I know the talking points on both sides.
He's not. He
No. Let me finish. Let me finish. I know what you're getting at. I know what you think. I know that you believe what I know you believe what you believe, and I respect that. I respect what you're saying. And I think that you think that we're not on the side of Tucker. And I get that. What we're reporting and what we're saying about Tucker is it's refreshing to see that he's bringing this side of UFOs out in the mainstream media, because a lot of media outlets aren't. They're giving you the wink and the nudge, and they're laughing and they're smirking as you're reporting UFO news. And that was the gist of what we were getting at. And I don't know why you would come forward and say anything else or nitpick the way that we're talking about Tucker Carlson. To me, this is confusing. So that's the gist of what I'm getting at with what he's saying.
He ends the email with, keep up the great work and more shows on cryptids would be appreciated. We'd love to do more shows on cryptids, Jeff. The problem is that a lot of the cryptid guests and I know there's new ones that come out, but a lot of the cryptid guests rehash a lot of the same stories over and over and over again, which could be said same with UFOs and other such topics. So we're always looking for good cryptid guests that have something new and interesting and have a unique story. The other problem is a lot of guests are like a good 10-minute segment guest and may not be able to stretch into an hour or an hour and a half. So if you have guests that you think that we haven't heard yet, that would be great. Please send them on to us, Jeff. We appreciate it. So thank you for listening. And don't take anything we've said today offensively. We just chose your email of all the emails just to say, hey, we understand the split down the middle. But it's a bit. We joke around and tease just about everybody in here. But I didn't know where people stand on them. Do they like them? Do they not like them? But now I have an idea that, yes, they like them and they don't like them. But we appreciate the email on that. We've got a lot of screwy news this week. And one that's not going to make you happy, Tim. One of the guys that's been on your side.
Yeah.
Might have flip-flopped. You're going to have to hear what happens in a few seconds.
All right.
But Florida man Florida man may not be alone in Florida, Tim. Maybe this will give us some insight as to why Florida man is such a lunatic. It seems UFOs have been spotted in Florida just recently, Tim. One UFO was spotted driving down the Florida Turnpike during traffic. Yeah, you heard that right. When driving down the road, you're bound to see weird things. Florida is known for having plenty of weirdness, like the infamous headlines about men in the state doing unusual acts in public or being arrested for a crime that was executed in a bizarre way. Well, this time around in the Sunshine State, a video posted on Instagram back on August 23rd from user Only in Dade, who then credited Oscar J. Perez in the caption for the video, captured a UFO is driving on a highway in Dade County, Florida. As of the writing of this article, the video has inched towards 90,000 views. I think it's well over that at this point. The UFO is on the road driving like a normal car. It appears someone took some components to create a vehicle that resembles an alien ship that is poorly blending in with the human race. Any details about the vehicle are currently unknown. The comments offered a wide range of different reactions, with some that have plenty of jokes about the video. One said that the UFO could not pay for the hefty price of a toll. Others made pop culture references, like comments about Rick and Morty and Marvin the Martian. As expected, someone mentioned Area 51, the Air Force base that is often theorized to be connected to cosmic unknowns that the government is keeping secret from the world. And a majority of the comments were just laughing emojis. If you saw something this wild, it would be hard to react really in any other way. Of course, seeing a usual sight of a UFO driving like a normal car will call for skepticism. People called it out as photoshopped, which is to be expected. In an email, Only in Dade told Fox News that it is not photoshopped. Watching the video, it is hard to believe it was photoshopped from the lighting and its movement, but maybe people need to get into it with a magnifying glass to inspect it closer, or at least try to find out who or what is driving that vehicle. Now, of course, UFO sightings allegedly real from space and goofy ones trying to assimilate with the residents of Florida have continued to pop up through this year. There was even a report of a fleet of unidentified flying objects around the International Space Station back in June. Earlier this year, the United States government opened up about its UFO reports, and it has plenty of potential sightings. The problem comes from inconclusive and inconsistent data to give a definitive stamp on the possibility of life from another world. Unfortunately, two spottings on a highway while driving may not work either if the aliens want to drive alongside humans. Yeah, maybe they're like, all right, government, explain this one. If you need something or anything related to a UFO, then J.J. Abrams' docuseries on Showtime might scratch that itch for you. The filmmaker is joined by directors Mark Monroe and Paul Crowder for the four-part show. It dives into the depths of theories, government reports, and people who have hunted to find evidence of intelligent life forms that have flown ships around our planet. I've asked people if they've seen it to let me know, and so far everybody's told me it's an amazing series. And now that I finally have a little downtime, when I'm in my room not filming, I'm going to try to catch this series and see what it's like. So, Tim, maybe Florida man himself is not so bizarre. Maybe what's happening is, there are so many UFOs and aliens visiting Florida and trying to assimilate into their population that what's really taking place is that it's not Florida man, it's the body snatchers acting so strange and bizarre throughout Florida. That could be the explanation.
The body snatchers, you say?
Yeah, alien body snatchers. It all makes sense, Tim, when you look at it.
Uh-huh.
Why isn't Tucker Carlson covering that? What is he hiding? Is he one of them, Tim? Is he a body snatcher, or has he been snatched?
Well, you're just asking for emails this week, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm throwing it out there. It's just a theory, Tim. It's a working theory.
I see. Yeah.
I'm wearing a bolo tie. I'm allowed to think outside the box, Tim. If I'm going to dress outside the box, I'm going to think outside the box.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. Uh-huh. Sure.
I have some bad news for you, buddy.
What's that?
You know, you had a proponent that was with you all the way, Tim. He was telling people AI is not good. This could revolutionize, take over the world. We could become crushed under its heel.
You shouldn't change your mind from that. I mean, you're just buying into what they want you to think. I mean,
or you're selling into it. in this case.
No, you know what? You're going to be the first crushed under heel, but hey, you know what? Go ahead, change your mind.
No. I'm saying or sell under it. When you hear the story, you'll see what I mean by that.
All right.
Your buddy Elon Musk, he warned of a Terminator-like AI apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's building a Tesla robot. That's right. For years, Tesla CEO Elon Musk warned people about the dangers of AI-powered robots, even predicting scary outcomes like the Terminator. Now, though, Tim, the mighty dollar seems to be speaking to him. He seems to be taking matters into his own hands before humanity is overrun. The electric vehicle company will develop a humanoid robot prototype dubbed the Tesla Bot. That really does sound menacing, doesn't it?
It is. The Tesla Bot.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Musk announced at Tesla's Artificial Intelligence Day on Thursday, according to Musk, the prototype will be completed in 2022, Tim. Though the billionaire entrepreneur is known for blowing past his own publicly stated deadlines on large, flashy projects in the past. For example, back in 2016, Musk promised a full self-driving vehicle by 2018, writing on Twitter.
Yes, Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his own thing. He created his own. If you're not a part of it, you're just not cool. Tim and I are part of Twitter, if you haven't signed up for it or haven't gotten the super secret.
I jumped in with both fingers. Invitation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. In 2 years, according to his Twitter, it says in 2 years, summon should work anywhere connected by land and not blocked by borders, e.g. you're in LA and the car is in New York. I don't know what that means. When that didn't happen, the billionaire entrepreneur promised that Tesla would supply the roads with 1 million robo-taxis by 2022.
Mm-mm.
How many have you seen so far?
I think they're stealth. I don't think I've seen any.
That's because, Tim, they're picking people up that vanish and are never seen again.
That's right.
Allegedly. I could be wrong. Well, last spring, he softened his tone during Tesla's first quarter earnings call, noting that punctuality is not my strong suit.
No.
Musk has claimed that Tesla's autonomous vehicles will hit the market shortly after they get regulatory approval across the United States. How his robot will face regulation remains unclear. But one thing is certain. Musk insists that it's very amiable, Tim. Mm. He thinks it's going to be a fun, friendly robot.
Oh, sure.
It's intended to be friendly, of course, Musk said during the Tesla Bot announcement, and navigate through a world built for humans. The sentiment, and for that matter, the entire nature of the announcement may come as a surprise to anyone familiar with Musk's longstanding public views on AI-powered robots. Musk's track record of caution against AI robots, of course, is known for his support and development of artificial intelligence. He's opposed at the pace of advancements, though, in robotics, often citing a film that came out when he was just 13, Tim. Porky's. No, Terminator.
Porky's. <Yeah. laughs>
I like to just keep an eye on what's going on with artificial intelligence, Musk told CNBC's Closing Bell in 2014. There have been movies about this, you know, like Terminator. Those are some scary outcomes.
Yeah.
He does realize, it's a movie, right?
Or is it?
I don't know. In 2017, Musk publicly referenced the Terminator again, citing that his neurotechnology startup Neuralink, which aims to develop brain implants for humans to interface with machines as a preventative tool against a threat like Skynet, the 1984 movie's AI antagonist. That is the aspiration, to avoid AI becoming other, he wrote on Twitter. But don't you think maybe he's part of the problem? Well, let me directly connect your brain to this so that can now take over. I think there's a more nefarious thing here. Once you've got the chip, how do you know he's not implanting like commercials to you?
Exactly.
And you want to buy all Elon Musk things. I want to buy like my new Elon Musk cologne, Tim, because Elon Musk is beaming it into the little micro trip he's put into my brain. I call it a micro trip, Tim, because that's what you'll be doing. You'll be tripping on Elon Musk products.
Smells like Elon. I want to break this down to a simple thought. And it's a conundrum wrapped in a faux pas, if you will. Think of it this way, Dave. These are the same sides or two sides of the same coin. Are you ready for this? This tells you where you sit in the issue of AI. It's a small world ride at Disney World. Is it joyful or is it creepy?
Depends on which part of the ride you're in, honestly. I mean, the cannibal children eating one another, that was the scary part of It's a Small World. I don't know if you remember that part.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But now everybody's going to be on there looking for it. I think they've gotten rid of It's a Small World now because of that cannibal child thing.
See? But That's the thing. That's the thing, Dave.
What I read, though, was that was not originally programmed. Those little bots just started eating one another.
See? Yeah. See? Technology gone wrong, Dave. Technology gone wrong.
How many people have stopped the show right now and are not listening because they're Googling when the It's a Small World ride began eating one another?
All of them. Oh, I'm just saying that is the coin that we're looking at with AI. That's it right there.
Yeah.
Sure, Elon wants to program a friendlier, better robot for all of us, but eventually the worm turns, Dave. The worm turns.
Well, you act like you're the one concerned for it, but then you're really the one that wants it to happen, right? So you, oh no, man, we got to be careful. That's why I'm going to create something better, safer. Oh, we trust you, Elon, because you're weird like us and you worry about the same shit we do. So we'll take that brain chip from you because you're worried about AI. And we know that if you're worried about it, you're going to make sure it doesn't happen. Doom,
doom, doom. He just wants to be the master of the apocalypse, Dave. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be the one under heel. He wants to be the one crushing you under heel. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. Wouldn't that be cool to have that on your resume? You know, I worked at telemarketing for AT&T for 3 years. I rotated tires over at Goodyear for 4 years, and I am the master of the apocalypse. Yeah. That would look pretty impressive on a resume.
Don't forget the stint over at Jiffy Lube. Yeah, there was that. Yeah.
Crazy. Yep. Well, later that year, Musk doubled down on his warning while speaking at that year's annual summer meeting of the National Governors Association, a Washington, D.C.-based nonpartisan political organization. Robots will be able to do everything better than us, Musk said during his speech. I have exposure to the most cutting-edge AI, and I think people should really be concerned by it.
See that? Okay. Whoa, 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 whoa. Those are famous last words.
But he said it years ago.
I don't care. That's why he needs to be stopped.
It's called foreshadowing in the movies, kids. Pay attention.
Yep.
Shortly thereafter, Musk tweeted some additional commentary, this time centered on a viral video of a parkour performing robot made by Waltham, Massachusetts Bates. It's a lot of words to have to say.
Yep.
Waltham, Massachusetts-based robotics firm Boston Dynamics. This is nothing. In a few years, that bot will move so fast you'll need a strobe light to see it. Sweet dreams.
Okay. Yeah, no. Yeah.
According to the presentation's briefing slides, the robot, codenamed... Oh, are you ready for this?
Okay.
This is the code name. Tell me this is not ominous. Optimus.
Come on.
Codenamed Optimus will stand 5 feet tall, 5 feet, 8 inches tall, weigh 125 pounds. So you make it just small enough that it seems, oh, that's cute. That's cute. It's not intimidating. It's not over 6 feet tall. It's short like most of the people, Tim. It's only 5'8", only weighs 125 pounds. Hell, I could push over 125 pounds. It has human-like hands and feet, contains a visual sensor to help it see, and ultimately work to eliminate dangerous, repetitive, boring tasks. You can talk to it and say, please pick up that bolt and attach it to a car with that wrench, and it should be able to do that, Musk said. Please go to the store and get me the following groceries. That kind of thing. I think we're going to do that. Now, some Wall Street analysts are questioning the timing of Musk's announcement. Daniel Ives, a Tesla analyst at Wedbush Securities, called it a head-scratcher in a post, announcing a report on Friday comparing the announcement to robotaxis and other future sci-fi projects. While we appreciate Musk's long-term technology vision, Ives wrote, a Tesla bot is not what investors want to see. Indeed, Musk noted on Thursday that the decision to build Optimus was not prompted by a specific manufacturing need, but instead because Tesla now has the capability to do so. We're already making the pieces that are needed for a useful humanoid robot, said Musk, offering no further explanation for how Tesla will safeguard against his long-held concerns. He also cast a somewhat shaky note of confidence that, if needed, humans could defend themselves against the Tesla bot. Hopefully that doesn't ever happen, but you never know. Yikes. Now, this story had been updated to reflect that the Tesla bot prototype will soon be in development, according to Musk. What do you think about that? One of your buddies, Tim. One of your buddies.
Not my buddy.
He was all against AI. You're all like, yeah, me and you, Elon, we're against. We see the problem. Schrader's crazy, this zombie apocalypse notion of his. We know it's AI, and now he's part of it, Tim. Which just goes to show, he's not worried about AI taking over the world. He's worried about the zombie apocalypse, and he needs robot warriors to help him, Tim. I'm just saying.
I'm Bill Curtis, and I've just found the internet.
Exactly. Well, Tim, maybe it's not AI we need to worry about. Maybe it's not zombie apocalypse or monkeys with guns, Tim. Maybe it's not psychic octopus. Obviously, we do need to worry about the Taliban. But well, did you know, Tim?
Yeah.
Witches are trying to hex the Taliban. After the fall of Kabul, practitioners began to gather online to fight against the Taliban with a mix of direct aid and magic. It's just after noon on Tuesday, according to this article, and a Discord server where witches have gathered to magically fight against the Taliban are sharing sigils and links to charities aimed at helping Afghans. I've already sent a small donation, and that is going to act as an etheric link for my workings, one witch said in the chat. If you don't have the money to donate, you can use mine as a focus. The Digital Coven is small, fewer than 50 members, but it earnestly is working towards helping Afghans through a mixture of donations and spell work in the aftermath of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. A group of witches decided to gather online to fight against the group and help Afghans. Motherboard agreed to grant anonymity to several moderators in the group's Discord because they feel targeted harassment campaigns. That's what they're afraid of. It's not just digital attacks the witches are worried about. A sticky post on a channel on the Discord acts as a kind of mission statement for the group. As you are all aware, Afghanistan is in a very dire situation, and many of us are preparing rituals and performing incantations to help alleviate the human suffering that is occurring there, the post said. The Taliban, as horribly as they have shown themselves to be, are very spiritually aware and are routinely taking steps to dispel, ward off, and weaken magic. They have indications and rituals of their own, which can, at the very least, neutralize us. At worst, can cause damage to our spiritual selves. Their group concerns against online harassment at least are warranted. The group initially formed on August 17th on the Bewitch the Taliban subreddit. Within hours of the group starting, trolls and shitposters flooded the subreddit. A post from the user, "You dumbest bitch," went viral. "Do not face Allah alone when astral projecting," the post began. "He is so effing powerful. I'm not at a power level to do this alone. I barely escaped from my life, and I'm spiritually injured to a great amount, but I think I'll make it." People on Twitter and other social media platforms posted and reposted Dumbest Bitch's post, intimating that it was representative of naive magical practitioners out of touch with reality. The moderators of the Bewitch the Taliban banned Dumbest Bitch, and the poster apologized. "My post is not meant to be taken seriously. I'm not a witch. I have no involvement with any of it. I thought it was kind of obvious that it was a joke, but I now realize that the original purpose of the sub was not satirical," Dumbest Bitch said on Reddit. "Anyway, I was really not expecting some obscure ass subreddit to get this much attention, let alone my post." The subreddit is now awash in similar posts and long since abandoned by the Digital Coven, who moved to a Discord server. "I basically stumbled my way over into leadership here," May, a moderator for the server, told over Discord. "I joined out of a blend of curiosity and moral obligation and offered to make the Discord server promote more active conversation in what was the same day as trolls. A lot of them were obvious neo-Nazis, found the subreddit, and from there, they pretty much stormed the entire server, spamming copypastas, porn, and slurs. According to May, the subreddit creator stepped back and the witches abandoned the subreddit. This place has become pretty much the only part of the internet. It seems we can talk safely and privately about the issue and our goals since it is far more private. We're not bothered about them, moderator Bean Soup said of the trolls. If you can't deal with a bunch of basement-dwelling losers, I don't think you're fit in an authoritarian extremist group. Bean Soup said they're a 55-year-old woman. She is a 55-year-old woman based in the UK who learned to practice magic from her aunt and mother. They want to fight the Taliban and believe that magic is the method by which they can make a difference. It's a 55-year-old woman. This is such a horribly written article. I'm doing my best to self-edit some of the poor grammatical choices in here, so I apologize for all the stumbles. It's just a mess. And this is on an actual website. This isn't some like crazy ass site. Anyway, as a 55-year-old woman, I don't think I'm what they're looking for when it comes to boots on the ground, they said. One common theme among the trolls and detractors is that the witches are looking to fight Allah, something all the moderators I spoke with rejected. No fighting any figures from any of the Abrahamic religions, Bean Soup said. Contrary to popular beliefs, we don't want to put Allah in a Faraday cage. I respect all deities. Like other Discord servers, there is a space for the coven to introduce themselves, a channel for announcements, and others explaining the roles of the moderators. The witches came forward from different backgrounds and used different names for their magical practices, but they've all come together to try to combat the Taliban and what's going over in Afghanistan. So I think that's interesting. I mean, there's the cone of power that was used during the World War II. There has been use of magic or allegedly the attempts to use magic during many different heightened experiences. And witches have come together even in much smaller covens than 50 that seem to have had some pretty interesting response. So, I just thought it was an interesting story that witches are trying to hex the Taliban.
One thought just hits me with the story, and that is that witch saying trying to put Allah in a Faraday cage. That's
No, she said she's not trying to do
that. No, I know, but even the thought of trying to do that is just such a ridiculous notion.
Hey, well, that's what a lot of these people are trying to say to her. You can't do this. You can't, shut down Allah. And she's like, I'm not saying I'm trying to put him in a Faraday cage. We respect all deities. You know, she's trying to clarify what the goofballs are out there.
I know. It just, if I may for a second, you have to recognize the political scope of what's going on. And I think our leaders have done a very good job of this on both sides of the aisle. Keep in mind this. Afghanistan has been the graveyard of kings for centuries and centuries. This isn't a recent thing. It's been an almost unconquerable land for many, many years. And while everyone's efforts are duly noted and the impossibility of this scope, if you think about it, is... It's a tall task. Put it that way. No matter what you try and think you're going to do, sometimes it's just better to throw up your hands and realize that there are cultures that are out there, and they exist because they exist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I applaud the efforts of people trying to do something magical, ethereal, intention-wise to manifest and try to turn the tide of violence that's taking place.
Sure,
all we can do in a powerless situation. We all try to
absolutely
our way in one way or another.
And you can put intention out there, absolutely. And you can do what you can do on your end. And there are, keep in mind, there are going to be people coming from Afghanistan that are refugees that are going to need a place to create a new life. And you can do what you want to do on that end as well. And you can welcome them with open arms. But there's so much you can do to help that situation. with that being said, there's a line, and I'm not going to draw that line for you here, and I have no place to draw that line for you. That culture has been there for thousands of years, and it is unwavering. It has been hard to move that line. So, who's to say what's right. going to be the force that moves that line, if it's ever movable?
Well, our thoughts and prayers are out to the families of those that lost loved ones in the recent attacks there. And it's brutal and sad. Absolutely. No doubt about it. We're not going to take any political stands on any of this, but the loss of life is tragic, right. sad. And all right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got an East London church that's haunted by three separate ghosts, including a famous highwayman. We'll talk about that and more when we return to Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio. There's an East London church, Tim, that's haunted by, they believe, three separate ghosts, including a famous highwayman. Any believer in the paranormal knows that London is practically a playground for ghoulish fiends. Considering the number of spirits that must have been released in the city through the centuries, it's surprising that there isn't a ghost occupying every single street corner. Who's to say there's not? We just may not be seeing them. There is one spot, though, in East London, however, which reportedly has more than its fair share of phantom occupants. St. Mary's Church in Wanstead, which was built more than 230 years ago, is apparently home to three separate apparitions. Each one has its own eerie and desperately sad backstory, and the most famous ghost is that of a notorious 18th century highwayman named Dick Turpin. Turpin started life as a butcher, but later joined a gang of deer smugglers in Essex before becoming a highwayman. He was known to frequent Epping Forest, using it as a hiding spot in between robbing innocent people throughout London. He was eventually executed for horse theft, but is thought to have returned to the church in Wanstead to be there in spirit form. He's even been spotted in the graveyard where his rumored uncle, Thomas Turpin, is laid to rest. Then there's a sad story of the church's second ghost, a lady in gray who has been seen aimlessly trawling the grounds of the church in search of her husband, who she lost shortly after their marriage. The third ghost also appears in the churchyard in search of a missing loved one. This apparition, a skeleton, apparently wanders around the churchyard pushing a cart with a coffin in it. The skeleton scours the grounds in search of his wife, whose body was supposedly stolen by grave robbers a century ago. Now, if it's just a skeleton, how do you know it's a him or a her?
If you're able to collect DNA and you're able to collect any type of...
No, they just see this skeleton walking through the churchyard, pushing this coffin cart. How do they know it's a male looking for its female counterpart if all it is a skeleton? That's the part I'm confused by.
Is there a robe over the skeleton?
It didn't say. It just says it's a skeleton walking through the churchyard, pushing a cart. And they're like, he's looking for his wife. How do we know? Has the skeleton stopped by? He's like, hey, have you seen my wife?
Maybe.
Could be. Yeah. It's weird. There's a lot of leaps of faith here, I think. Temporary suspension of disbelief should not be temporary in this point, I guess. The church isn't the only prime ghost hunting spot in Wanstead, as the local park is also reportedly home to a spirit or two. Catherine Tinley Long, who used to own and live in the Great Wanstead House before it was demolished, is said to roam through the park, upset and unable to find rest due to the way that she and her home were treated by her husband. He was a gambler who spent all their money and eventually left the house to be knocked down. So next time you're in the Wanstead area, we recommend keeping your eyes peeled for bony ghosts and ghoulish guests, Tim. That's all I got.
Okay.
Yeah. Some conjuring spells, or not conjuring spells, conjuring stars, rather, spill on spooks, scares, and superpowers, according to this new article that we've got up. That was a hard mouthful to say. Conjuring stars spill on spooks, scares, and superpowers. Did it better the second time. Mm-hmm. When The Conjuring was released in 2013, no one could have expected a movie by then unknown director, Malaysian-born James Wan, would make such an impact. But 8 years on, The Conjuring universe is one of modern horror's greatest success stories, being a multi-million dollar franchise with a global fan base. Now, aside from engaging stories and genuine scares, the success of the series can be attributable to the strong cast, especially Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, who play real-life husband and wife paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. Wilson and Farmiga have appeared in 5 of the 8 movies in the franchise, and with the recent release of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, streaming from today on HBO Go, the pair had much to say about their work on the series. The latest installment places greater emphasis on the relationship between Ed and Lorraine Warren, which was interesting for their portrayers to tackle. I had a lot more fun because we got to explore more of Lorraine's abilities as a psychic, Farmiga told the FMT in a recent interview. Wilson explained that trips in the real-life Warren's home have inspired creative decisions in a particular gazebo that harkens back to the couple's teenage romance. It was fascinating that they took that information and made it a real plot point for the movie, he said. It's nice to have little pieces of their real life and reflect their love and history. The Devil Made Me Do It centers around the true story of Arnie Johnson, who claimed to have killed someone while possessed by a demon. Farmiga and Wilson said that they were unaware of the case prior to the film, but what they learned was chilling. They had an opportunity to meet the actual Arnie Johnson, but chose to distance themselves for reasons they admittedly found hard to explain. The distance from them is important to me, Farmiga said simply. Wilson agreed, adding, everything we do is through the eyes of a script. It's nice to keep our distance as we're just telling a story. In this movie in particular, because of the subject matter, because we're talking about an actual homicide, it really grounded the movie in a different way because there are real victims here. That distance enables us to embrace the love between Ed and Lorraine, which acts as a redemption for the darkness of this story. For him, the stress of work and being away from his family is offset by the quality of the films and the good time he has on set. We love playing these guys. We have such fun with these movies. As dark as they get, we have a great time, he said. Farmiga said her character continues to fascinate her. I think her relationship with her creator is a big deal for her. It always infused her with calmness. I'm nothing like Lorraine, she confessed. I wonder how I would have reacted in the situations that she had to face. Wilson and Farmiga's on-screen chemistry extends into real life, with the duo acknowledging how much they enjoy actually working together. Their bond was also evident when they answered a question about what superpowers they wish they could possess. Farmiga said that she would love the gift of healing, while Wilson's answer was the power of flight. I'd be a tour guide Superman, a flying Uber, he said to Farmiga's laughter. To complement their memories of filming, they have taken home a few mementos from the set. I was given a rosary by the real Lorraine, and we actually use that in the movie, Vera Farmiga said. I also have a bottle of holy water that was given to us, but I keep it in my medicine cabinet next to my deodorant, she said, laughing. When it was his turn to reveal what he took home from the set, Wilson replied, a chair and my tight pants, a reference to the hip-hugging clothing Ed would have worn in the late 1970s and early 1980s. While mementos are good, one thing they wouldn't want to bring home with them are actual supernatural entities. Asked if they had any experiences or anything of a creepy nature in real life, Wilson had nothing to report, but Farmiga said she had an experience that could have been something or perhaps nothing at all. I have had these sensations where I felt a hand on my hip while I was at the house that had such a dark history, she said, adding that she also came across the occasional flying object. Yet she's not sure it's a real event, Tim. When things go flying across a room, that's as real as it kind of gets, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
While Wilson believes in unseen forces at play, he keeps a positive attitude to avoid trouble. He says, I try to keep that out of my life. Over the years, with all the movies, anything paranormal doesn't scare me anymore. I feel like I probably can handle it. If anything happens, I'll just call Vera to come over. I like it. Patrick Wilson has turned Vera Farmiga into his Shane Pittman, Tim.
I see that, yeah.
Yeah, something scary happens, you send Vera to deal with it. Huh. Well, speaking of movies, Ethan Hawke is back. He stars in The Black Phone, Jason Blum's scariest movie he's ever worked on. Have we decided, is it Blum or Bloom? I think it's Blumhouse Presents, right?
Yeah, it's Blum, I think. Yeah.
Jason Blum's Blumhouse Productions is well known for providing some of the year's biggest horror hits. For instance, they're behind the titles like Paranormal Activity and The Purge. Their films typically have lower budgets, making the movies quick and easy box office successes. They signed a 10-year first look with Universal Pictures back in 2014. Further, The Black Phone is their next horror vehicle starring Ethan Hawke. Director, co-writer Scott Derrickson and co-writer C. Robert Cargill made Sinister in 2012, which is still one of my favorite of all of the Blumhouse movies.
Mm-hmm.
And also had Ethan Hawke in it. The story follows true crime writer Ellison Oswalt, portrayed by Hawke. After moving into a new house with his family, he finds a mysterious box of old home movies. However, Ellison discovers that they are videos showing horrific murders that go back as far as the 1960s. Consequently, his family's lives are on the line of him getting to the bottom of these killings. Derrickson went on to write and direct the Marvel Cinematic Universe Doctor Strange in 2016, or as they type in this article, Doctor Strange.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which wasn't as good as the Doctor Strange movie.
No.
He hasn't directed a full-length horror film since Deliver Us from Evil back in 2014. However, it appears that he's making a return to the genre in a pretty big way. Indeed, Sinister remains to be one of Blumhouse's most frightening movies to date. Additionally, it has a huge success on a reported budget. Wow. Check this out. How much do you think they made the movie Sinister for? All the special effects and storytelling, how much do you think it cost to make that movie?
$2
million. $3
million. Wow.
Yeah, I think $2 million of it was just Ethan Hawke's pay.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that to be true. It grossed $87.7 million worldwide. That's a pretty good return on your investment. I'm no mathematician, Tim, but I'm pretty sure that's around $84 million in profit. That's a good turnaround for a job. I don't know if you...
That's pretty darn good. So. Yeah.
Now, Kieran Foy directed Sinister 2 from a screenplay written by Derrickson and Cargill. However, the sequel failed to capture the same lightning in a bottle. The Black Phone, though, Variety reported on the Universal presentation at CinemaCon 2021, Blumhouse's next big project, sees Ethan Hawke reunite with Derrickson and Cargill. The screenplay is based on a short story written by Joe Hill. However, this is a very different role for Hawke. The Black Phone tells the story of a kidnapped child, played by Mason Thames, who's locked in a basement that's stained with blood of a half dozen other murdered children. In the cellar with him is an antique telephone, long since disconnected, but it rings at night with calls from the other side. CinemaCon's teaser introduces Hawke's character as an antagonist. He lures the young lead with claims of being a magician. Next, the young boy is in a basement where the phone starts ringing. Ethan Hawke recalled that Blum addressed Sinister as the scariest movie he'd ever worked on. However, he mentioned that The Black Phone has now usurped Derrickson's 2012 feature. So that says something. First of all, the premise sounds absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
Derrickson has become a more recognizable name after working on Doctor Strange. He intended to return for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, although he exited the project due to creative differences. Now he's returning back to the horror genre with The Black Phone. The teaser footage terrified members of the press. Similar to Sinister, it introduces horrifying stories of unspeakable violence with a paranormal twist. This time, the supernatural element is an attempt to help the young boy rather than being the threat. If the creepy children and paranormal events of Sinister are any indicators, this next movie is going to be a pure nightmare sensation. The Black Phone rings into theaters January 28th, 2022. I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds like a good movie.
Dude, it sounds crazy good.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds weird, right? When you think about it, it's based on tortured and murdered children. That's not good.
No.
But the scary element of it. You know, that's got to be a hard line to walk, especially when you look at the horror genre and ghost genre, you know, torturing. You notice that they, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, they would kill a dog with no thought or a cat in a movie. There's a lot less of that in movies now because, again, you don't want to mess with animals. People get more upset over the murder of a dog in a horror movie than they do over teenage innocence, right?
True. Yeah.
It's crazy. But but you walk that fine line because there's, to me, there's nothing creepier than children's ghosts.
Right.
So you've got these, but then that means they had to have died somehow. So you've got to create a backstory, and that's where it gets kind of dicey, right?
Yep.
Yeesh, but that's a strange line to walk. We'll have to see how it turns out. Let's see here. Here's a story for you, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Ready for this?
Yep.
I was abducted by reptilian aliens and strapped to a bed naked in a UFO, claims a man.
Well, don't threaten me with a good time.
A Brit has recounted the story of what happened to him when he claimed he was abducted by reptilian aliens and taken aboard their UFO. Philip Kinsella claims that he had the alien encounter back in 1989, where he was woken in the middle of the night before being levitated in a UFO. He said he was then strapped naked to a bed where he was probed. The twin, who lived just outside of Bedfordshire and at the time, suggested that the incident took place one night after he got home from work. Now, speaking on a different podcast, he described remembering a bright light appearing in the sky with his twin brother Ronald, and then going into a kind of trance. However, Philip said that it was after he had gone to bed that the horrifying incident occurred. He described being woken up and pulled towards an object before blacking out. The next thing I recall was I found myself in a kind of medical environment. It was a bit dingy. It was very hot, and I found myself naked. When I turned to my right, there were what I can only describe as ridiculous as it sounds, three reptilians that didn't communicate, but were this kind of hidden in this thicker mist. I was absolutely terrified. Even more so when I found that there was some sort of implement that they had placed in my lower part of my regions, he said. There's two lower parts of regions. I wish he would have been a little bit more forthcoming. Yep. Front or back door. Porch or rear entrance. He went on, I was absolutely petrified, and then I started to scream and yell because I wanted them to take it out of me. I just wanted this thing out of me because it felt organic within the lower parts of my anatomy. Organic meaning it felt like it was a living organism inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
These beings, whatever they were, had no compassion, no love, no sense of empathy at all. However, he recalled how he was rescued from the examination by a small gray life form. As it appeared, the device that was inside me was slowly retracted. Then the straps came off, and I noticed that there are three reptilians had just gone. They disappeared, he claimed. What if, Tim, what if they had shown up and that biological thing that was going in them was to remove something that the grays had put there? And when the grays returned, they quickly left.
I vote smart gerbil.
Smart gerbil.
With a doctorate. Yeah.
Yep. Philip said the gray then ordered him to dress, communicating via thought transfer, then escorted him down to the ground and back into his body. He continued, I had some physical marks afterward the next day. My brother found three triangular marks right behind my ear, three on my right arm, and I also had profuse nosebleeds from my right nostril. And those finally stopped after 2 years. Ooh, 2 years of nosebleeds. Good grief.
I can relate.
Strangely, it wasn't the first time a member of the Kinsella family had allegedly been the subject of supposed alien abduction. Philip's twin brother, Ronald, also claimed he had an extraterrestrial encounter when he was supposedly abducted a few years earlier, back in 1982, Tim.
Oof. Hmm.
Now, I'm curious, in all honesty, if you suddenly came to and you found yourself on a dingy UFO having your nether regions manipulated by an organic creature, would you come forward with it, or would you be too like embarrassed and humiliated to want to discuss it or talk about it publicly?
Nothing embarrasses me anymore. I'm an old man. I'd probably talk about it only in the interest of, one, to see if there was somebody else out there who had had that experience, and to talk to them and see if I could relate to somebody who'd had that experience and see if maybe I wasn't crazy and if that actually happened. And two, I guess to, I don't know, because, you know, you hear the stories, you hear other people tell those stories. So, I guess to kind of measure my own self up on the, and take no offense to this, people who have had these experiences, but you know, people who have never had the experiences and can't relate to them, there's a, I don't want to put it on the scale, but I'm going to. People have their own internal BS meter, I guess, or and so I'd want to put it out there to see if it does measure on someone's BS meter. I know what happened to me. I know it's real, or I think it's real. I think the experience I had was real. So I guess I want to bounce that off.
Wait, you think you were abducted?
No. If it happened to me, I'm saying.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, I'm just always curious about that because it's like, you know, if I feel like I'd been probed.
Yeah.
Appropriately. I don't know if there's an appropriate way to be probed.
I don't think there is.
I don't know if I would have talked. I don't know if I'd want to talk about it. But I guess so.
Initially, I wouldn't. But eventually, there is an amount of time where the shock wears off. And there is a time where you do want to come forward and say, hey, I believe something happened to me. And I got to find out if it has happened to others, you know, legitimately happened to others. I got to get it off my chest, and I got to figure out if there's a group of people who do talk about it and figure out how to deal with it, because eventually you have to move on from it and live your life.
Weird.
You know? I guess that's how I look at it.
A man who was exorcised by a priest woke up with huge claw marks on his back the morning after the eerie ceremony was conducted, a Monsignor has claimed. During an exorcism, a religious figure in this case, a Monsignor, was actually attempting to draw out the evil spirits that are supposedly inhabiting this person. Exorcist Monsignor Stephen Rossetti set out a frightening story about what can happen to participants after a ceremony. We had one person who woke up in the morning with what looked like claw marks on their backs, he explained. It looked like a huge beast just took their claws and raked them across their back. Five claw marks about 2 feet long and about 2 inches wide, and it looked very ugly. The Monsignor did attempt to reassure people by explaining that this isn't a normal consequence of the ceremony. He continued, there are different degrees of possession. The fully possessed people usually start thrashing pretty badly. Lesser cases, there will be some demonic reaction, but it's not quite as extreme. But the Monsignor explained that changes to physical appearance can often be taken as a sign of possession. That's one thing I'll ask people who say they are possessed. I'll say, well, do you have any unusual bruises or scratches? And many times the possessed will, he said. Exorcism scenes have been popularized by high-budget horror films, and though the Monsignor described the famous Exorcist film as a bit Hollywood, he suggested that there is some truth to the movie's more disturbing scenes. Sometimes people scream, and sometimes you hear satanic voices coming forward from them. The Monsignor described how these exorcism ceremonies can last 2 hours or more and usually take place in a quiet chapel where religious figures do not work alone. We work in teams. We also have a group of lay people who are prayer warriors, spiritual directors, and they restrain the people if needed for their own safety, he said. Most of the time the person is seated, but if they're going to really start thrashing badly, we'll sometimes start them lying on a mat, or they can even be restrained from the beginning. That would be, you know, I kind of would want to see a true exorcism take place. But then there's the other side of me that's like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I really want to see it, because I don't know. First of all, I'd be afraid that what if it gets, you know, it leaves and then it's like, hey, let's check out Schrader for a while. I don't want to be the new Airbnb for demon headquarters.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking of, I didn't know whether I was going to tell this on the show or not, and I'm still, you're talking about things you don't know if you want to come out with. Do you want a story in lieu of a theater of the mind this week?
Yeah, let me see here. Let me take a vote. Show of hands, people that would like to hear a story from Tim. It's overwhelming. Everybody's got their hand up, Tim. The floor is yours, sir.
Deeply personal story that I don't know that I want to... I even don't know that I want to, but I'm going to do it. It even comes with a picture that we'll put on the website.
Yikes. Okay, so this will be under today's news tab at darknessradio.com. You can click on the news, and the picture will be at the top of today's news segment, and then the news stories will be below it. All right, Tim.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So, and this will be a little lengthy, so bear with me, okay? And it comes from this past weekend's Michigan Paracon, okay? As everybody knows, huge wrestling fan, okay? And one of the hottest wrestlers out there right now is a wrestler by the name of Danhausen. He's got kind of this, a little bit of a supernatural gimmick. He's got face paint on. He wears a Dracula cape. Everything is very nice, very evil. That's kind of his tagline. His parents were at Michigan Paracon. His father is actually, I'd like to get his father on the show. He's a psychic who actually paints the vision he's getting of you. It can be a vision of a past life. It can be a vision of something that's haunting you. It can be a vision of a reading or anything that he's getting of you. And he doesn't talk to you during this reading. Basically, he gets this vision. He paints it of you. And then he gives you the interpretation he gets. And then you talk about it briefly. Now, keep in mind, he can't unpaint or add to the painting. Okay. So Brian's been at Michigan Paracon for quite a few years, and I've seen him there, but I haven't put two and two together that he's the father of Danhausen. Of course, they have the same last name. I'm an idiot. So I see him in the hallway over by that little cafe there, and his mom is walking by and wearing the ROH Danhausen, Ring of Honor Danhausen shirt. And I go, "I like your shirt." And she goes, "Thanks. I gave birth to him." And I'm not thinking of anything of it. And I went, Oh, you're okay. I get it. So we talk a little bit, right? And I tell Brian, well, I'm going to come up and I'm going to get a reading from you, because I'm really intrigued by what it is he does. Okay. I had the most intriguing reading. Now, you and I have talked about curses before on the show.
Yes. And you are a firm believer that you are in fact cursed.
Aha. And I have. Now, some people may think psychic readings are bullshit, blah, 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 blah. I have what I believe is, at least according to Brian Danhausen, evidence of a curse, which is backed up by other things that have happened, not only to me, but to my nephew and in this painting. Okay, let me explain. So I go up to Brian, and it was funny because he was booked the entire weekend. I go up. And I think it was on Friday. And I went up at the end of the day. And it was like 5:30. And I said, "Hey, I'm just looking to see if you have any openings on your list." And he goes, "Well, I'm pretty booked, but I can make time for you." He goes, "You know what? I have a 5:30 here. And if she doesn't show, then the time is yours." And I went, "Ooh," I asked somebody to watch my table for 10 minutes. But I said, I guess I could do it. He goes, "Oh, it doesn't take very long at all." He goes, "In fact, you just sit in front of me and I really don't say a thing to you. I put on my headphones and I kind of get the messages that I need to get. I do the painting and then, we sit and we talk about it." I said, "Okay." I sat and I talked to his wife the entire time while he got the messages. He does this painting. Okay. Then he turns it around and he shows me. Now the image, as you're listening to this podcast, okay, I'm going to pull up the image and I'm going to describe what it is here on the air.
Now, is this something that you could shoot me a picture of on
yes.
Messenger so I
yes.
can look at this whilst we're I'm talking to you
yes.
and hearing this?
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that right now.
Now, I have not seen this, folks. Tim and I were we were at the same con. I was over at the Holzer Files table. Tim was on the other side of the room at the Darkness Radio table, and we got very little chance to see each other or hang out because we were working the whole damn weekend. So this is all new to me.
Now,
all
when, right, so when you see this
picture,
yep, I just shot it over to you. When you see this, okay. It looks freaky.
Yeah, it does. What the shit?
Okay. Now you're going to think, "Whoa, Timmy's possessed." That's not what's going on here. When you see this, I'm going to explain exactly what this is. Okay. So the image in the middle, of course, is me. Okay. I look like a dark figure. Okay, there's me and I have these blue eyes, and around me there's these yellow, it's like a yellow crown of like spikes, but that's just a yellow crown of light. That's like burgeoning psychic ability, okay? There's these white circles that go around me, and these are these portals that open up around me at all times. So that's these portals that open up around me, and you see these four black figures around me. And he says, the dead are always around you. They always surround you, and they're always trying to talk to you. But if you see there's a little red V around my neck, that's me having cut off my psychic ability. He said, you cut off your psychic abilities when you were young. Something happened when you were young that cut off your sight. You cut off your psychic ability because it was too much for you to handle. He said, now, if you look down at the bottom of the page, or the bottom of the painting, he said, that's a young Timmy right there in bed scared. Because when you were young, you used to hear, I see wood floors and I hear a scratching on wood floors. I said, yeah. And he goes, there was something that used to scare you every night coming out of your closet. I said, yeah. And he said, it was that thing right there in the corner. You see that thing in the corner?
Yeah, like Wile E. Coyote's evil demonic twin.
Yep.
What the deuce?
My nephew, Tyler, I don't say his name very often, saw that exact same thing when he was little. I brought over my Benedictine medal, and he had it for about a year because he couldn't sleep because he saw that thing in his closet. Okay? He said Uncle Timmy had red eyes, and it would sit there and it would growl at me. And he used to hang my Benedictine medal over his bed, and he would take it with him to the bathroom, and then he would take it back with him to bed because he was scared of it. And he said it was cut in half, and it only had two hooves. Do you see that it's cut in half, and it only has the one hoof there, the one big hoof, giant hoof?
Yeah, right.
I asked Brian, I said, is that a full...
Is that a hoof or a claw?
It's a claw. It's a claw.
Okay.
I said, is that thing cut in half, or is it a full apparition? He said, no, it's cut in half. He said, this is an elemental. It's not a demon. He said, but it's an elemental spirit. But he said, it's not a nice spirit. And he said, it's very, very old. It goes from generation to generation. I said, okay. I said, now let me ask you a question. And by the way, those people that have left like little comments about my family history can eat a dick, by the way, that they're like, we're sick of hearing about Timmy's family history, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, eat a dick. So I was talking to Brian about my grandfather that was the fourth Grand Master of the Knights Templar. And he said, wait a minute. And he stops. And he said, I'm getting a vision. He said, tell me how your Templar grandfather died. So I explained to him about getting ambushed at Ascalon, how they went into the walls in Ascalon. And I said, all I know from history is that they were ambushed by the Turks. They were beheaded. Their heads were put on a pike outside the city walls as an example to anybody who messed with the Turks. He said, I see an image. He said, before they were beheaded, they were in like a he said, all I see is a stone prison. And he said, I don't know if it was your grandfather or somebody else was chained to the stone prison. Like, you know, the chains are on the floor and the chains are around the wrist. You know how that works? I said, yeah. And he said, I see that they see that there's no way out. There's no hope. And they unleashed a spell upon the Turks, knowing that there was no hope. And it unleashed that thing right there against the Turks, hoping that it would consume the Turks. And the spell went wrong. And that is reflected back on your family.
Okay. Did he tell you how to get rid of it? Or?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm supposed to see someone within our community that is not just a priest or, you know, he said, it's not going to be a priest or anything like that, that does a simple blessing. Essentially, it's supposed to be someone like John Zaffis or someone who's higher up like that, who specializes in exorcisms, or Bill Bean, or someone who has a specialized knowledge of an elemental that could clear it. And he said that would break that lineage.
That's creepy, dude. That's weird. Well, get it broken, man. Get it broken.
So it was very interesting. So what I did is I didn't give my nephew any. I said, "Will you indulge your crazy old uncle for a second?" And he said, "Sure." And I said, "Do you remember when I borrowed you my Benedictine medal for that thing you saw in the closet?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Did it look anything like this thing in the corner of this painting?" And I just sent it to him. He said, "Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like." And he goes, "Is that me in the bed?" And I said, "No, buddy, that's me." He said, "You saw it too?" I said, "Yeah, well, I heard it. I think I might have seen it, but I was too young to remember, or I blocked it out. Because I don't remember seeing it. Or if I did, I blocked it out because I was too scared." So, yeah, that was kind of an eye opener this weekend. That was an interesting little deal.
Yeah, that's crazy. Boy, I'd like to have a reading. Well, maybe I don't want a reading. I don't want to see what's attached to me.
But as he put it, he said, "This isn't necessarily an attachment. It's a," he said. So I said, "Would you say it's a curse?" He goes, it's a. He said, "In a way it is." He said, "It's not necessarily a curse. It was a spell gone wrong. In a moment of desperation when the Templar knew that they were done for, that band of Templar knew they were done for, they unleashed this thing upon the Turks, and it's that rule of witchcraft where I don't know that it's the rule of threes per se, but you know.
No, but what you send out there comes back to
exactly.
You threefold or something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And they thought they were doing what they needed to do in order to strike back at a force that ultimately was going to cost them their lives. And it came back on them, and it came back on their ancestors. Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird, weird, weird. Well, yeah, hopefully you get that broken now. Get rid of it. Yikes.
Yeah. So it was.
Well, the picture's up, folks. Go to darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab. There'll be the picture. And then, I'll try to have like a thumbnail so you can click it and then open it up to see the bigger picture. And then I'll have the news underneath it, each one of the links for the stories that we're talking about on today's program. I was just putting up stories before that just had the video or photographs. I'm including all the stories now because a lot of people are like, "Oh, where was that story? I wanted to share it with somebody." And once we've kind of moved on, I've already forgotten it. So I don't keep the links. So now they're just going to all be up at darknessradio.com under the news tab. If you go there, you'll find the link to every news story that we cover on the episode. And sometimes I even throw in a bonus news story or two that didn't make it on the air because it was a good article, but it was 42 pages long kind of thing. So go check that out. So how does that make you feel now seeing that? I mean, you feel vindicated, obviously, but is it also double-edged sword? Part of it's kind of a relief. Yes, there's something there. And then the other side, oh shit, there's something there.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. I fear more now for my youngest nephew, because he's extremely sensitive. The thing behind it is that it made itself known to the more sensitive members of the family. And my youngest nephew is extremely sensitive. So I guess I fear a little bit for him. So I guess I'm going to put together a little care package for him so that he's somewhat protected. And now I need to, I don't know how I bring it up to someone who can help me, because I don't know that they take me seriously. You know, I've contacted, I won't say who on the air, but I have contacted some friends of ours, and I don't think they took me seriously when I contacted them. It was kind of like, "Oh yeah, whatever, buddy, you know, blah, 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 blah." And I never got taken seriously. So I don't know how to go about it.
I just like literally within the last week bumped into somebody I was talking to that I didn't realize was adept at dealing and breaking curses in the field. I've got to refresh my brain is swimming. You know, we went out last Wednesday. We were there Wednesday through Sunday at Michigan Paracrown, spoke to a billion people, travel all day Sunday, you know, back out recording the show here on Monday. So my mind's kind of a muddy mess, but as soon as I figure it out, I'll connect you with that person. But I think there's a few people that might be able to give you a hand.
And I might have to too. try and find someone who's adept maybe a little bit too at Templar magic, because I don't know what, I mean, it's a, you got to figure it's a curse that goes all the way back to, I shouldn't say a curse, but magic that goes all the way back to 1153. You gotta think of that too. Yeah.
Jeez, it's crazy. Yeah. Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I think you should write that up. We'll make a theater of the mind someday in the future here. Well, I didn't have that kind of experience at the Michigan Paracon, but I did do something that to me was quite terrifying. I was asked to go up on stage during Dean Haglund's.
I saw that. Yeah.
Improv comedy show.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but I was terrified. Although, you know, what's funny is I talk about intention, and we've done that a lot lately on the show, and I did a whole class on manifesting an intention. And first of all, I wasn't sure, Tim, for you know, I go out there, I do a talk every year at the conference, and I always bring a new talk. And I saw that people do these workshops as well, mm-hmm. that it's outside of your regular talk, but that it's a workshop-based program. So I decided I'd try one this year, and I wanted to do it on intention, manifestation, time travel, and the paranormal and how it all ties together. And, you know, I threw out the deal, and usually they'll have it in one of the little side rooms where you'll get 20 to 30 people that pay, you know, $30 to come see your little side panel, your class. And I was noticing online all these other classes sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. I'm like, oh crap, mine is not. And, you know, like I said, usually I've got about 20 to 30 people, and I'm mm-hmm. figuring, I wrote to the coordinators. I'm like, hey, listen, this is getting embarrassing. If it's not selling out, let's just quietly cancel it, you know, and leave it be. So I'm not standing there in front of five people. And they said, no, we haven't canceled it because we had to move you to a bigger room. You've got over 100 people signed up.
Oh, cool.
So I got to do my talk in the main theater, which was amazing. We ended up with about 125 people in attendance. So thank you if you attended. If you attended, send me an email. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I spoke and saw from a handful of people that came up to me. But, you know, I did a couple of experiments, and one of them was this internal time travel healing experiment. And it was really powerful to me. As a matter of fact, it choked me up. Because when, you know, I have everybody close their eyes, deep breathe through it as I kind of walk them through the exercise and mm-hmm. what I want them to do. And then as I bring them back out, you know, there was probably 20 people crying in the audience because it was having that kind of impact on them.
Oh, wow.
So that was really nice and refreshing. But at the beginning on Wednesday, the first night, there was a VIP party, and one of the questions posed by the host to each one of us on the panel was, if you weren't doing what you were doing, right, what would be the one thing in life you wish you could do? And I said, I'd like to be like a cabaret performer, like a musician and comedian. I said, I've always wanted to do stand-up comedy. I've always wanted to be part of a comedy show, but I'm terrified. My insecurities just won't allow for it. And, you know, then I do this whole talk on manifestation and intention. And then I get asked to be on stage with Dean Haglund to do an improv show. It terrified me. When he hit me up, he's like, Schrader, I'm going to call you up. My stomach was in knots for 2 days. I even tried to get out of it and told me you should ask Jeff Belanger. And Dean's like, no, man, it's going to be you. It's got to be you. And it was just funny because he wasn't there for the VIP deal when I said that. Mm-hmm. He wasn't part of my manifestation and intention program. But so I got to go up on stage and I got to be part of a comedy show, which was really exciting for me. I only mentioned that because Dean is selling it. He made a video. He had a little video camera off to the side filming it all, and he sells it on a little flash drive. It's cool. It's like the size of a business card, and it's a 4 gig flash drive. The comedy special is about 2.5 gigs. I think it was 35 minutes long, and it's this improv show, and he brings me up for like the last 10 minutes of the show. But he does have it available for $20. If you're interested in it, email me, daveatdarknessradio.com. I'll forward it all over to Dean. So, you know, put your contact information and address, and I'll forward it to Dean, and he will invoice you or whatever he does and get it out to you. So if you're interested in seeing the little comedy improv show from this last week at Michigan Paracon, you want to get it for $20 and have a laugh, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll forward it on to Dean Haglund. He'll reach out to you, and you'll be able to order a copy. He'll send them out to you. But it was a fun time, an interesting little show. But it was, you know, it was exhilarating and fun and terrifying all at the same time.
Well, it was brilliant. I mean, to be honest, it was brilliant. You wouldn't know it if you hadn't just said it that you were nervous. And you guys played off each other extremely well. It was very polished. It was very funny, and it was cool. There was never a lagging moment in it at all. It was, it was wall-to-wall laughs. It was very good.
Here's the funny thing. When we started doing live events, you know, I'm terrified of public speaking, which is weird for a guy who's on radio and TV, but I'm terrified of it. I've got these insecurities and going out on stage. You know, Jason and Grant insisted I led one of their panels at UnivCon back in the day, and I stood up in front of a crowd of 200 people, and I had no memory of what happened afterwards. And that happened to me through most of Darkness Radio events. It wasn't until about the last 2 years that I started having actual memory of being on stage and what was being said or done. I remember walking up on stage. I remember walking off of stage at the improv show. I have no memory of what took place while I was up there.
Really?
And I haven't watched it yet. So he gave me the flash drive. I haven't watched it, but it was just like, I have no memory. So it's somebody, you talk about kind of creepy. I've gone up and I get told, oh man, that was great. That charity auction was hilarious. Better than a comedy stand-up show. That talk was great. No memory of what happened. I mean, I know my outline. I know what I went up there to say. I have no memory of how it went off. So it's kind of like that disconnect, you know, you've heard from people when they are in a serious accident and they kind of throw themselves out of their body so they don't have to experience it. I think I've been doing that for years with my talks, is I throw myself out and I just let my nature take over for it. So it's really bizarre, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. So if you guys are interested, I just thought I'd mention it and let you know about it. Dean's show is really funny. He does a lot of great improv stuff and brings people up from the audience. I think he had four or five people come up throughout the show and add different elements of the show. And it was a lot of fun. So if you're interested in getting it, let me know and we'll connect you with Dean. Also want to remind you, September 10th is coming up, folks. Lizzie Borden special. Curse of Lizzie Borden will be on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. Please watch it and watch it multiple times. The success of that will dictate if I get to do more Shock Docs. But this was a really amazing opportunity for me. It's weird. Again, it's when you film it in these disjointed segments, and then they piece it all together with the recreations and the story. So you know what happens when you're there, but to see it actually played out on TV is a different experience. So I'm excited. It was a great opportunity. And it was the last time I got to talk to Leanne Wilbur, who ran the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. So it'll always be an important part of my life. So I'm glad I had a chance to do that and see and talk with her again. But The Curse of Lizzie Borden, Discovery Plus, September 10th. Please watch it. Make sure you share it with your friends, relatives, and promote the shit out of it on social media. Hey, Dave and Tim, found you guys through the Holzer Files, and I'm catching up on all Darkness Radio podcasts. I travel a lot for work, and your podcast has been an amazing companion on these long road trips. I just finished listening to an episode where you spoke about chiropractors and massage therapist offices being notorious for hauntings. I wanted to add to that list that tattoo shops are also a hot spot for paranormal activity for much of the same reasons. I've been a tattoo artist for well over 25 years, and I have yet to work in a shop that doesn't have a haunting associated with it. There are three shops in particular that I have a number of stories from, as do the colleagues I worked with in those places. Might be worth talking to a tattoo folk that you know. It could make for a really interesting show. Thank you for all your work. I hope to cross paths with you guys down the road someday. Cheers. And that comes from, I don't know if it's Sharon, C-H-A-R-O-N, or Sharon. I apologize for not knowing how to say it properly, but thank you very much for writing in. Well, yeah, I guess there's a lot of anxiety and stress in getting tattoos. People are fearful going in, not sure what they're going to expect. Sometimes you're going in for these, you know, memories. You want a child's birth, a family member's death, something tattooed to you. So are you leaving little elements of who you are behind? So that's an interesting aspect of it I hadn't thought of before.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a little more obvious to me that it's an extremely emotional experience. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of permanency to going into a tattoo parlor. Yeah. And putting those memories on, into flesh. It's really, yeah, that would be an extremely emotional place that would call forward spirits. Sure.
A mom in Mexico has been left in shock after noticing what she believes to be a paranormal figure appearing beside her daughter on a slide. Miss Hernandez Blanca filmed the moment her little girl slides down the playground equipment, but didn't notice that there was an eerie apparition until she watched the video weeks later. In the video, the young girl is seen coming down the slide just as a floating head appears in the shadows behind her. The girl then joins her sister at the bottom of the slide. The incident was filmed in a children's park in the city of San Nicolás de los Garza in the Mexican state of Nuevo León last month, with local media just reporting on the scary moment now after she shared it online and it went viral. I did not know whether to upload this or not, but I decided to share it, Blanca said on Facebook. This happened to my daughter 4 days ago. I told several people that I was shocked and asked them what their thoughts were. My daughter and her father were scared. I don't know why this happened or what happened to my baby daughter. Every time I watch a video, it just makes my skin crawl. I just wanted to share this paranormal story with you, and someone please give me your hypothesis because I'm shocked. Now, we do have this video and the news story up at darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab, scroll down through the stories, and you'll see it. Facebook users, of course, weighed in on the video, agreeing that the figure was out of nature. It didn't look normal. It seems paranormal. It has a very ghostly face to it, one person said. It's so ugly, it could only come out to scare, a second person theorized. But others weren't so convinced. You can tell it's someone in a mask, one person wrote. It's just an ugly kid hanging out with them, another person joked. I don't know. It is weird, though. Definitely creepy looking face of this something coming up over the top. Looks like that Pazuzu face from The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Showing up over the top of it. Let's see here. We only have a couple of quick stories left before we let you go for the day, folks. Here's another one that you'll be able to find on our site, and you can actually see the image for yourself. An eerie photo taken this week might be evidence of a ghost haunting Flint Castle. Let me see. I apparently have to skip the survey in order to read it. A man took the photograph during a visit to the castle with his young son on August 16th. When he looked at the photo after returning home, he was shocked to see what looks like a figure on the grassy area in front of one of the castle walls. Oh, shit. Yeah, what is that? Wow, that is really weird. It's like a fully formed three-dimensional shadow person, but you can see light play of white and grays on it. It's really, it's definitely a physical form.
Mm-hmm.
It's set against a dark background of a wall. At first I was like, oh, you're just matrixing. No, this thing's out and in front of it. You can see the bend of the knee as it's running towards you. He passed it on to Lynn Murphy, who has been investigating ghost and UFO sightings at the location, like Wepper Woods in Flintshire, for years. Lynn of Flint said, he told me there was nobody else there inside the castle at the time. He took lots of photographs of his son. When he got back to his home in Flint, he looked at the photos and had noticed something in the background of one of the photos. He zoomed in on it and got the shock of his life. I believe this is an apparition. Lynn thinks the photo might show a replaying of a moment from a previous time, so a time slip phenomena. She believes it shows the figure of a woman possibly holding a book in her arms, but wants to investigate the site further. She adds, What I will do now is go back to the castle and take more photographs. I've taken photos there before and have shown some strange blurring, so I think there is definitely some kind of energy there. She hopes that other people who were there on that day may have also seen something unexplained at the castle and will comment on the story. Lynn has also shown the photograph to UFO investigator Ross Kellett, who is coming to Flintshire to investigate how many strange happenings seem to be going on in that region. Ross, who recently published his new book, E.T. Rider, is working on another volume about events in North Wales, including the infamous Berwyn Mountains incident. Of the Flint Castle photo, he said, it is one of the best photos of its kind that I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot. There are definitely something at play here, whether it's a figure of a man or a woman. As always, when dealing with the paranormal, you just can't quite put your finger on it. That's a cool picture. It is, again, up at darknessradio.com. Click on the news tab for that. Our final story is here. The Lizzie Borden House, Tim, is looking to hire a ghost hunter. Really? If you aren't afraid of ghosts, there's a new job for you in Fall River. The infamous Lizzie Borden House, now part of the U.S. Ghost Adventures Company, no association to the TV show Ghost Adventures, offers tours in dozens of cities across the country. Now they're looking to hire a ghost hunter and paranormal investigator. According to a new job posting, it's a part-time gig leading ghost hunt tours at the home where Abby and Andrew Borden were killed back on August 4th of 1892. So, if you're interested, the job pays between $15 to $20 an hour with tips. and you're obviously working a night shift, they're looking to hire someone with at least 1 year of experience in paranormal investigation and knowledge of ghost hunting equipment. So folks, that job is up for grabs, at least it was as of the recording of this episode, so you can go find that job offer and link on Darkness Radio under the news tab, so go check it out for yourself. That's it for today's program. Tomorrow, though, Tim, we're going to talk about Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind with Martin Keller, right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.